Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Westlife Development Limited Q4 and FY21 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there'll be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Devanshi Dhruva, Manager, Investor Relations. Thank you, and over to you, Ms. Dhruva.
Thanks, Neeraj. Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us on Westlife Development Limited earnings conference call for the quarter ended 31st March 2021. We are joined here today by Mr. Amit Jatia, Vice Chairman, Ms. Smita Jatia, Director, and Mr. Pankaj Roongta, CFO and VP Finance and Accounts for Westlife Development Limited. Please note that our financial results and investor presentation have been mailed across to you, and these are available on our website as well. I hope you had the opportunity to browse through the highlights of the performance. We shall commence today's call with key thoughts from Amit, who will provide a strategic overview, which shall be followed by Smita to take you through the key business initiatives with overall operational progress, the impact and response to COVID-19, and the strategic imperatives that lie ahead. Pankaj will cover analysis of the financial performance and highlights during the review period. At the end of the management discussion, we will have a Q&A session. A request to all participants that due to the disruption due to COVID-19, members of the management are joining the call remotely, and there could be some time lag when responding to your query. I urge you, therefore, to kindly bear with us. Before we start, I would like to remind you that some of the statements made or discussed on this call today may be forward-looking in nature and must be viewed in conjunction with the risks and the uncertainties we face. A detailed statement and explanation of these risks is available in this quarter's press release, investor presentation, and in our annual report, which is available on our website. The company does not undertake to update these forward-looking statements publicly. With that said, I would now turn the call to Amit to share his views. Thank you, and over to you, Amit.
Yeah, thank you, Devanshi. Good evening, everyone. I hope all of you and your families are keeping safe. FY21 was a challenging but inspiring year, a year that redefined resilience as the world fought an unprecedented pandemic and its economic fallout. For us, it was marked by the commitment and the conviction of our Westlife family that helped us turn this adversity into an inflection point for a new, better, bigger, and bolder McDonald's. We used this crisis to consolidate our strengths. We leveraged our diversified real estate portfolio, long-term rental deals, and led strategic rental renegotiations. Our backward integrated closed-loop supply chain and the world-class training processes ensured business continuity in what I can call the most difficult and challenging times for the business. We also did some exemplary work on the cost leadership front. The cost structures we have today are much stronger and resilient to volatility. At the same time, we created new competitive advantages by tapping into our robust technology and process backbone. We launched new products, new channels, and helped consumers create and adapt to new ways of consuming us through drive-throughs and on the go. Through the year, we navigated a million uncertainties and came out stronger with all our 10,000 people with us. We have been seeing our efforts reap great results. As we speak, our brand trust is rising consistently, making us the preferred customer choice in uncertain times. Convenience is performing robustly, aiding incremental revenue growth, and omni-channel strategy has come to life in a strong way, making us accessible to customers wherever, whenever, and how they prefer. The business recovery has also been phenomenal. The last two quarters of the year have helped us recover the losses of the first two quarters of FY21. We entered the year with a strong balance sheet, and despite all challenges.
Participants, please stay connected. Line for the management call stays connected. Ladies and gentlemen, please stay connected while we rejoin the management back to the call. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your patience. We have the line for the management reconnected. Sir, you may go ahead.
Yeah. Our robust revenue recovery in the quarter continued to be driven by our convenience channels. This, aided by smart cost control, bolstered our margins. I am happy to report that with the exclusion of an exceptional cost, our operating EBITDA for the quarter stood at a solid 11%. We closed the quarter with a PAT of 21 million and a positive cash flow of 322 million. With this, we believe that we are entering the new year with a good momentum and a balance sheet that puts us in strong stead despite the challenges that lie ahead. The start of FY21 was marked by the onset of the pandemic. The nationwide lockdown that was announced on March 23, 2020 extended well into the first half of the year. During this time, we were guided by our survival strategy pegged on brand trust, enhancing convenience, cash conservation, and maximizing our supply chain strength for business continuity. We started deploying our revival strategy in the second half of the year as the restrictions started easing and customer confidence started to build back. We saw strong and quick recovery across platforms. Our convenience platforms, namely delivery, on-the-go and drive-thru, along with the golden guarantee promise and customer experience, helped us build back revenues on a sustained basis. As a result, we saw staggering improvements across the business parameters. Our revenues more than doubled in the second half of the year. I am happy to share that strong recovery in H2 FY21 coupled with cost leadership helped us wipe away all the losses of the first half. Despite many regulatory headwinds, our sales growth was steady through the year, culminating in more than 106% recovery in this quarter. This was aided by close to 90% recovery in dine-in and accelerated performance of our convenience channels that clocked a solid 42% growth over last year. In fact, McDelivery reported its highest ever sales in the month of March. Our drive-thru channels reported an 81% growth in the quarter and on-the-go grew 3 times over the last 3 quarters. We are seeing our out-of-restaurant channels that primarily include drive-thru, delivery, on-the-go continue to perform robustly. This gives us great confidence that convenience is here to stay, and once dine-in recovers completely, we will be pegged for exponential growth. We believe we have pivoted to become a destination that serves customers seamlessly whenever they like, wherever they like, and however they like. Our other big win was cost leadership. With great support from our vendors and partners, and by maximizing our operational efficiencies, we were able to bring down our fixed costs significantly. This has given us added firepower and helped us strengthen our financial performance further. Moving on to the highlights of this quarter. This quarter reflected a 5 to 7% growth in the IEO category and a shift in the distribution. Western fast food, or what we say the organized sector, has grown by 18% due to customer preference for hygiene and assurance. Within this, we have gained share both in WFS and IEO. This has reflected in the SSG for the quarter at 10% and future potential to capitalize on. Assurance and convenience remain the key tenets of our strategy. We continue to tap into key occasions to keep the excitement going. Our efforts to promote premium McCafe beverage also showed great results. Convenience continued to outperform through the year. Our unique McDonald's app has been a value-based platform that has consistently helped us build guest counts and engage customers. More and more customers are taking to the app, and we have seen the app download surge and active users increase by over 50% year on year. Finally, I am glad to report that after a COVID-induced blip in 2020, we are now back on track with our expansion plans, much in line with our Vision 2022 commitment. This quarter, we have opened a flagship store at the departure terminal of T2 International Airport in Mumbai, while 4 to 6 new stores are under development as we speak. In an effort to ensure safety of our employees and customers, we are also aiding vaccination of our crew. With this, I now hand it over to Pankaj to take us through the financials. Thank you.
Hi, thank you, Smita. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you and your loved ones are keeping safe. We delivered a strong quarter four and have entered FY22 on a much firmer
footing. Sorry to interrupt you. Sir, your audio is not coming clear. May I request you to speak a little louder?
Yeah, sure. Is it better now?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Smita. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you and your loved ones are keeping safe. We delivered a strong quarter four and have entered FY22 on a much firmer footing. We have been able to continue the strong quarter three momentum in accelerating sales and profits while rationalizing cost. Let me now give you highlights of our key performance indicators. We clocked sales of INR 3576 million or 357.6 crores for the quarter, which is a 6.3% growth on a YOY basis, despite regulatory headwinds, lockdowns, curfews, and capacity limitations across the market. We also registered a same-store sales growth of 10.5% for the said quarter. Sales were driven by an almost complete recovery in dine-in and an impressive 142% recovery in our convenience channels. Convenience has been one of our biggest growth drivers, especially MDS and drive-throughs. They have grown by 26% and 80% respectively over quarter four of last year. They helped us not only in creating new occasions for our existing customers, but they have also fostered new ways of consuming the brand and helped us recruit new customers. This acceleration in sales, coupled with cost leadership, has led to a 93 basis point jump in our gross margin that landed at 66.5% for the said quarter. Throughout the last year, we have been restructuring and reducing our operating and fixed cost. As a result, and backed by volume recoveries, the restaurant operating margin touched a five-year high of 16.4% for the quarter, a whopping 527 basis point growth on a YOY basis. This is truly representative of all our cost efficiency measures that defines our cost leadership. Fixed cost reduction, layered with judicial control on discretionary expenses, resulted in a significant improvement in our operating EBITDA. It stood at 325 million for the quarter, up from 196 million same quarter last year, resulting in an operating EBITDA margin of 9.1% for the quarter, a solid 65% growth on a YOY basis. We also booked one-time costs in Q4 that are pertaining to salary reinstatements and special incentive to our McDonald's family. We are happy we are able to give back to our employees for their hard work. Excluding this one-time cost, our operating EBITDA stands at 11%. We believe we will be able to continue our robust performance in FY22 once all the channels are operational again. All the above resulted in a net profit of 21 million versus a loss of 167 million in the same quarter last year. Our cash profits for the quarter stood at 322 million. What is important to note is that our cash profits of Q3 and Q4 together have helped us wipe off 100% of the losses of first half of the year, and hence we delivered cash profits of 24 million for the full year on a lower sales base versus last year. Our focus throughout the pandemic has been to maintain a robust liquidity position, contain debt, and build a stronger balance sheet. I'm happy to share that we were able to optimize our treasury and working capital arrangements, thereby reducing our net debt significantly. We are almost a net debt-free company end of quarter four and have healthy cash and cash equivalents on its balance sheet. As we step short-footedly in FY22, our priorities continue to be fiscal discipline and flexibility, accelerating our convenience channels and expanding the business. Despite unprecedented challenges, the last year has also thrown us at some great opportunities. We have clinched some really attractive real estate deals and have a strong pipeline of network expansion projects for the coming year. With that said, I will now hand it back to Amit, who would take you through the outlook for the coming quarter. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Pankaj. Before I go to the outlook, I'll just take a minute to summarize some of my opening comments. Basically, we have seen our efforts reap great results last year. As we speak, our brand trust is rising consistently, making us the preferred customer choice in uncertain times. Convenience is performing robustly, aiding incremental revenue growth, and omnichannel strategy has come to life in a strong way, making us accessible to customers wherever, whenever, and however they prefer. This is what we were able to achieve last year. The business recovery overall has been phenomenal. The last two quarters of the year have helped us recover the losses of the first two quarters of FY21. We entered the year with a strong balance sheet, and despite all challenges, I'm happy to share that we've exited the year with an even strong one. I'm pleased to report robust year-on-year growth across key business parameters, including revenue, margins, and profit. In terms of the future and the outlook, of course, uncertainty and volatility are the order of the day and will continue to persist. But we are more confident than ever about our strategy and will continue to invest in brand, technology, and growth with a sharp eye on the cost. We believe that we've been able to future-proof the business to a large extent. We believe as normalcy returns, we will be amongst the first brands to revive on the back of high brand trust and a strong convenience brand. Further, as we saw in the last quarter of this financial year, as dine-in builds back, coupled with our strong out-of-restaurant channels like McDonald's delivery service, drive-thru, on-the-go, and takeaway, we are well poised to deliver strong SSSG. We have cracked the code on being able to do much more with much less. Our new leaner cost structures will help us deliver strong profitability and insulate our balance sheet while navigating challenges of the second wave of COVID. We are back on our expansion plans and will continue to open new stores in strategic locations. We will also invest in new cutting-edge technology solutions to enhance the omni-channel experience of our customers and strengthen our rock-solid foundation. With all arms in our arsenal, we are confident of delivering great value to all our stakeholders. Thank you. And with this, I open up for Q&A.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. The first question is from the line of Manoj Menon from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, Amit, Smita, Pankaj, and Devanshi. Trust all well with you and here and there. I got three questions, Amit. I'll take probably the first one at a time. So when we look at the last 12 months, credit to you and team for managing, very efficiently. But how about the next 12 and 24 months? Could we expect faster than even the 15 odd restaurants which you open? What I'm just trying to understand is, given a strong balance sheet, given the opportunities possibly in real estate, and in the general, market, is there a case for a faster expansion in 22 and 23? Of course, assuming that, let's say there is a steady state situation in a few months' time. That's question number one.
Okay, sure. Basically, the first good news is that obviously we've entered wave two much stronger than we were even in wave one. Not only have we learned a lot, but the customers have learned a lot as well. So, for example, in wave one, in the first instance, consumers were even little scared to order delivery and to allow anybody to even come and leave the delivery at their doorstep. While when we've entered this particular wave, I think that particular business has remained pretty steady. Even the government, to some extent, has learned, and therefore the clarity is slightly better than how it was in wave one. Now, having said that, as you've heard, our cost structures are pretty robust. So to that extent, we are entering pretty strong. Obviously, we put our business plan together for FY 2022, and our thought process was a very strong and a very high opportunity growth business plan. That's what we sort of intended to do. So, for example, we currently have five to six restaurants under Groundbreak at this point in time, and we don't intend to stop restaurant growth. We intend to continue with it. I do agree with you that I do believe that real estate is a bit of an advantage for us. Therefore, when people would ask me, "Why are you not at the airport?" You will see that at a very difficult time, but with a pretty good real estate long-term deal structure, we've been able to open at the international departure. And even though flights are less, we are doing quite well there. So yes, with a strong balance sheet, our idea is to go ahead faster. We will be opportunistic. We will open in locations that we were earlier finding difficult. And our original plan was between 25 to 30, 35 restaurants was what we were thinking about. Currently, I'm not sure how wave two will go. We will not change our plans. We hope to be able to stay with these numbers I've talked about. But if we've lost this quarter, we may have five stores here and there. But thematically, we want to go aggressively and build restaurants. This is the time to do that with the kind of balance sheet we have.
Absolutely. Loud and clear. Thanks, Amit, for that. The second one is actually on the situation at this point in time. Okay, let me put it this way. So what we have seen in the past is that the QSR industry probably had a higher linkage to new consumer recruitment, the general well-being, the consumer confidence, and of course, the PFC growth, the GDP growth, etc. So I'm just trying to understand from a plan B point of view, assume for a minute that if there is a distress in the economy, I hope it doesn't really happen and there have been enough interventions like what happened last year. I'm just trying to understand what's your thought processes or anything which you are thinking of improving the value proposition, which you are anyway are as a brand. I'm just trying to understand your preparedness for a plan B so that it's probably a smooth landing if in such a scenario. I'm going strictly by the empirical evidence of the last 10 years of the available data of India QSR industry, where despite the high penetration opportunity, I've noticed that this industry goes through significant volatility versus the opportunity.
Sure. I mean, see, firstly, that is because it takes, when you are building a country like India, it first takes time to get the supply chain in place, get the ecosystem in place. And really, the growth I have seen come only from 2010 onwards. So effectively, if you ask me, we are still very nascent and we are touching, even the consumers are still discovering what this is all about. So that is sort of point number one on a broad basis. Now, a major thing has happened the way we see it. If you think about QSR as an industry, it is an impulse business. An impulse business is driven by convenience. And this is nothing to do with India. This is how the sector works anywhere in the world. Pre-COVID, even a brand like McDonald's was occasion-led, and we were driven pretty much by occasions where consumers would come and use. What COVID has done is pivoted the brand towards convenience. And what we are seeing is when in-store sales were zero to when in-store sales went all the way up to 70%, we did not see any dent in the business of convenience, all the four channels, which is takeaway, drive-through, on-the-go, and delivery, as the in-store business built back up. So broadly, I feel that we've become from an occasion, we are moving towards becoming a convenience brand, which bodes very well for us. Secondly, if you look at the structure of the industry, what has happened is we do a lot of research right from 1995, 1996, so we have a lot of empirical data. the eating out frequency in the last quarter went up by about 5%. While Indian fast food was a bit flat, Western fast food grew quite nicely. And we feel that the shift towards organized play is going to continue to happen as we move forward. And all that bodes very well for the kind of business that we are in. So I believe that while, you know, we believe in operating in a volatile world, I cannot predict exactly when wave 2 will end and wave 3 will come and so on. But I feel that with the new cost structure, with the new pivot towards convenience, with all the channels now working at full play, we will be amongst the fastest to recover. And broadly, that's the best I can say for now.
Understood, understood, Amit. And if I may, you know, maybe this is relevant 3 or 6 months down the line as well. You know, anything from the global MACD system of, you know, of learnings, consumer behavior, etc., which is relevant for India. You know, that's why I said, if not, if it is probably this is too early a question, I'm happy to, you know, discuss this, you know, 3 months down the line.
No, I mean, you know, broadly they keep sharing all the data. You know, they do a lot of research, even including India. So we are seeing a lot about how consumer behavior is. So we have tons of data around that. Manoj, that is the sharing. There's a lot of support, conversations. There are countries that are ahead of the curve, like particularly I've seen in Korea, Taiwan. I would have mentioned that last year as well. And fortunately, the system shares all that with us very openly. So we feel that we are able to foresee what is coming a bit better than anybody else. So that's how we are sort of capturing that data and using that to our advantage.
Amit, that's what I'm just trying to get, you know, it's not a guidance as such, you know, but we're just trying to get, you know, what, if we could share some of those learnings, maybe, you know, may not be relevant for India, you know, but in anything which could, you know, let's say, for example, change your trajectory materially in the medium term from the global learning. And I'll come back in the queue.
Yeah, we will come back to that in a bit. I think it's a better to have a sort of separate call around all of that because that's too granular. But let's see if we can create some call where we can talk a little bit more about that.
Thank you, Amit. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anand Shah from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi team. Thanks for the opportunity. This is just one particular question from me. If you can share what would be the mix of convenience and dining in Q4, you know, once that dining is now almost normalized, how is the mix settled? From last year, it used to be more like 50-55 convenience and then dining. And now, how is that mix essentially looking once things normalize?
Sure, Anand. So basically, if I were to look at kind of January as a benchmark, we were almost 100% of pre-COVID sales. So that was good news. In that, our convenience channels were almost 60-ish%, 55-60%. And in-store was about 40-45%. Roughly that was the sort of breakup on that.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, and in-store was still at only about 70% of pre-COVID. That may also give you a bit of color on this.
Okay, so in Jan, you are saying you were 100% of pre-COVID, but the dining was more just at 70% and contributing 40-45% overall.
Correct, 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 absolutely.
Okay, got it. And does this have any margin implications in that sense once convenience goes up? I mean, is it a more profitable channel or a platform versus dining?
See, I think our numbers of the last quarter itself define everything. I think we have reset our business model over the last year. That's what gives us confidence, and we had talked about it through each quarter as we went. A restaurant operating margin, I think we are amongst the few companies that actually break out our restaurant operating margin so clearly. And in the last 5 years, this is the highest restaurant operating margin that we've been able to deliver. So I'll go back to my philosophy, as I've said this before. My philosophy is wherever consumer business is happening, we have to make that business model work for us where consumption is happening. And therefore, as the pivot has happened, because globally, as I mentioned to you, we are a convenience brand. As this pivot has been accelerated, we've been able to adapt and adjust our business model to make it work. You might also recognize right from day one, I've always said that it's about partnership with the 3POs. Yeah, we don't see them as a threat in any way. We feel that as long as we are able to build a partnership, it becomes very powerful. So we, I think, have got our business model towards the new reality post-COVID as well.
Got it. No, it's quite visible in your numbers, noted. And this last question, as things have normalized, have you seen any changes in the average order values? I mean, I would assume earlier it had gone up and now it would have a little bit normalized and the number of users would have gone up. I mean, any color you can share on these?
Yeah, so what we've seen is that when there is consumption off-premise, yeah, outside of the restaurant, generally the average check tends to be higher. So because we are still skewed, and we hope to stay this way in a way, even if in-store builds, we expect same-store sales growth to come, you know, obviously the average check is a bit higher than in the past. And I think this trend is going to stay because some of our strategies moving forward will also play into that. You will see that evolve over the next 2 to 3 quarters.
Perfect. And this is just last one, if I may squeeze. Any guidance on the store expansion? I mean, you're back to the 25-30 that you were generally looking at.
So the plan was built around 25-30. As I mentioned earlier, you know, this quarter, obviously there's no movement. We cannot construct. So we've lost this quarter, although we have 5 or 6 restaurants in ground break. So the intent is to stay within that. Maybe it's 20 to 30, maybe not 25 to 30 as we had hoped. So it will be a few restaurants here and there. But the intent is to get back to the FY20 growth plans and more.
Got it, Amit. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Percy Panthaki from India Infoline. Please go ahead.
Hi, team. Congrats on a good set of numbers. My question is more on trying to understand the margins going forward once the COVID impact is completely gone. So I understand that your dine-in is around 90% normal and dine-in is about, let's say, 45% of your total sales. So once that normalizes, your total sales goes up by 500 bits. And your EBITDA margin, your gross margin is, let's say, 65%. So out of that 5 percentage points, around 3.5 percentage points flows down to the EBITDA level. So is this calculation correct or am I missing something? Are there certain discretionary costs which are not yet fully sort of normalized in Q4 and when the COVID impact is completely gone? That will come through and therefore this 3.5 rupees is not totally accretive and it will only be partially accretive. Any kind of sense you can throw on this very rough calculation that I'm making?
Yeah, I mean, I'll try and share it in the way I understand it. Essentially, I don't see shift in dine-in and dine-out anymore to cause any margin impact on us. As I mentioned earlier, I think we've got our business model reasonably set around where the business is today. So that is point number one. Point number two, we have been able to optimize a lot of the cost and I think a lot of it is here to stay. Important thing is it is about average unit volume. Okay, and if you recollect, I said earlier that with the new business model, even with a slightly lower sale, we'll be able to deliver robust margins, which I think we have in this quarter. So in the future, margin flow through will continue to come through average unit volume growth. In summary, that continues to stay as it is. And I don't see anything changing because of a shift in the way we are selling to the consumer. Neither do I think that when COVID is fully gone, the business model will change substantially from where it is today. Of course, there are headwinds around inflation. And as we all know, but I feel that that's a constant challenge in India. You know, I've been saying this over the last 5 years and therefore we are always kind of thinking and being prepared for that. So this is, you know, at least how I see it.
I think I didn't express myself very clearly. I was not talking about any shift from dine-in versus convenience or vice versa. What I was saying is that the normalization in your dine-in business is to the extent of 90%. Now, if we say that that is completely normalized from 90 to 100, that's about a 10% bump up. And since dine-in is approximately half of our business, at an overall sales level, that will be a 5% bump up. And 65% of that, which is your gross margin, flows directly to the bottom line. That is what I was talking about.
No, fair enough. I mean, you are
5%.
No, so you are asking the same in the same way only. So effectively what I'm trying to say, okay, I'll put it this way, that as in-store builds, in-store is currently about 70% pre this second wave. As in-store builds, I expect same-store sales to go up, which is the 5% you talked about. And number two, as in-store builds, and sorry, as sales build, same-store sales, yes, the flow-through will come to the bottom line, which is what I was saying, that as average unit volume goes. So I was just saying it in different ways. So you are absolutely right that as in-store builds, I do expect same-store sales to grow. And as same-store sales grow, I do expect the margin to flow through to the bottom line.
Okay. So the Q4 costs that I see, which are reported in your Q4 results, they are fully restored costs. There is nothing that you're holding back. I mean, proper re-engineering of costs is one side. I mean, obviously, that is permanent. But there is no temporary cost holdback, which is there as part of your Q4 margin. Is that understandable?
No, no. Yeah, you are right. You're right. In fact, we've declared a bonus for all the effort our team made. And that is also in the cost, by the way. It's a one-time cost. And if I were to take that away, our operating EBITDA goes to 11%.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah, that's all I wanted to understand, sir. Thanks and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Amnish Agarwal from PL India. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I need a couple of questions from my side. Something which is related to the one which you just answered on the margin being 11% if the one-time bonus is not included. So if I calculate that number of 1.9% actually, then the outflow on account of bonus and employee benefits incremental in 4Q comes out to be around 68 million rupees. And if I say exclude the 68 million rupees from your 4Q numbers, then actually your, it means that your number actually at the employee cost level they have actually declined on a QOQ basis. So is my thinking right or am I missing something in this?
No, the exact calculation, I'll let Pankaj answer that. He would have a better sense. So this includes the reinstatement of some salaries and the bonus. So and I think let Pankaj answer that. He might be in a better position to respond.
Yeah.
Pankaj,
so,
can you please take that?
Yeah. So Amnish, there are two elements of the employee cost and when we look at the P&L. One is on the G&A and second on the operating cost for the crew labor. So of course, things are not like to like on a quarter on quarter compared to last quarter versus this quarter. And as you rightly pointed out, the impact of the one-time cost has been 2%. So if we were not to book that one-time cost, the operating EBITDA goes to 11%. The second thing is that we have been talking about a lot of efficiencies in the operating cost, including the structural cost improvements, operating hours, etc., etc. So that also has an impact on the overall cost that you see, excluding this line item, why costs are becoming better. And as Amit said, a lot of them are structural in nature. So as we recover the business, as the store operating hours goes back to normal, these savings and optimizations are here to stay.
Okay, so should I presume that if I exclude that one-time bonus and restatement, on a QOQ basis, the payroll and employee benefits, they have actually declined from 33 crores to nearly 29?
Yes, so part of them are also contributed because of the regulatory restrictions in terms of operating hours, etc. But a lot of it is the structural cost improvements that we have been working on.
Okay.
Yeah, they are not like for like, you know, comparison like that.
Understood. And so my second question is that it's on McCafe basically. So can you throw some light on how many stores now we have under McCafe now? How are we trending on that in terms of the throughput and the contribution from McCafe as we close this year?
Yeah, I mean, McCafe has been building quite well and sales are coming. Obviously, it's not yet where it was pre-COVID, but it's been building quite well. We have about 200 restaurants plus that have McCafe.
Okay, because the last number in Q3 was 227. So have
yeah, so it will be. It's not lower than that for sure.
Okay, and how much it would have contributed to sales for us in the current year? Has there been any dip now because of these lockdowns and low dining?
So we don't share the breakup, but yes, in the early days there was a dip in McCafe sales from pre-COVID times, and quarter on quarter it's been growing quite well. It is still not where it needs to be because, you know, McCafe has a lot of play around in-store as well. So we don't share the breakup, but the good news is that on quarter on quarter, we are seeing McCafe build quite well. Also, we've added some good elements around delivery of McCafe in terms of hot coffee and things like that. So that channel is also building up quite well. In fact, in many of the 3POs, we are listing McCafe separately as well. So it shows up when you do search on coffee.
Okay. So in this context, then, would it be fair to presume that given usually that the cafe business has got higher gross margin, that once the recovery fully sets in terms of dining over a period of time, then it could provide a good delta to our gross margins?
It should, but I also keep inflation a bit in play. So those are sort of our things in our hand that can allow us to offset some of those inflationary costs. I think for our business, I feel we are on a very strong trajectory with gross margin. So I'm not sort of, we are not pushing it as a business, but yes, if McCafe builds, logically, you should get more gross margin. However, like I mentioned to you, there's also a lot of headwinds on inflation. So we are hoping that extra little thing can cover that up.
Yeah, yeah. And Amit, you, in your remarks, you elucidated that you are getting very good real estate deals and you are now on a very firm expansion path. So can you give us some idea that where would be, say, the rental and other payments you make for these real estate deals now vis-a-vis which you were doing in the pre-COVID times?
See, I mean, it's hard to say, but to give you an example, we were, more importantly, able to open in the international departures because we are very particular about the contracts we sign. And finally, we believe that the restaurant should be able to make money. So, you know, and a good example is that for last 5-7 years, we've been trying to get into the airport, but we never found the deal structures to be appropriate enough for at least us to sign. However, we've been able to enter, and I think even with 5 or 6 flights that are currently running, we are able to do decent sales and we are able to at least break even. So, there are difficult areas like a BKC, we already have a restaurant. But at least those areas, the kind of offers that are coming to us are sensible. I wouldn't say that they are cheap by any standards, but at least they are something that one can negotiate and talk. I can't give you a percentage because each deal, each location matters. And finally, it depends on the sales we can do in that location. So BKC is today's reasonable BKC is still unreasonable from rest of India, for example. So I hope you are able to see what I'm saying. That there is reasonability for the area that we are going into and we are able to conclude these deals that we would have earlier not been able to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And Amit, final bit from my side, can you, I know it's very tough time, lot of uncertainty, but any color on how you can say the April is trending or how the first 2-3 weeks of April were, if you can throw some light on that. Thanks.
I mean, that would be a bit of a forward-looking statement, but what I can say is that I think definitely better than last year. There's no doubt about that. And at least delivery is running and there were no disruptions in delivery other than some curfews impacting some restaurants, but in-store is completely shut right now across our territory. So it's definitely not where we want to be, but it's definitely not what it was last year. So it is somewhere in the middle, but demand from delivery is pretty good. If, you know, from that point of view.
Okay, sir. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nihal Jham from Edelweiss Securities Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Yes. Thank you so much, and good evening, Amit, Smita, and Pankaj. Amit, maybe this was asked earlier, but just wanted to clarify. As I understand, between your convenience and your dine-in channel, you've always maintained that margins are similar. But I would understand that at least on the gross margin side, the dine-in channel would be higher considering the commissions and some of the other aspects. So is that a right assumption? And why I ask this is that despite such a strong share of convenience that you mentioned about in Q4, we have actually seen an improvement in our gross margin specifically. So if you could just highlight a little more on that.
See, the gross margin improvements may not necessarily be because of shifts in that area. It could be because of the work we've done on raw cost. Again, if you look at our last earnings call and the call before that, we had mentioned that we are getting, working with our suppliers to get into their costs and their supply chain. And some of the work has yielded result, and there is more work continuing in that area. But currently, if I'm not mistaken, the gross margins around both, the way at least we look at gross margins, is quite all right. We look at commissions separately. We don't take commissions as a reduction in gross margin. And on that front, I think we are pretty even on the in-store and the and delivery. Pankaj can confirm that actually. But
yeah,
to my mind, it is quite even.
Yeah. There's not a significant difference between the two.
Sure. And just related to that, I do notice that you've launched a recent range of premium menu burgers. Does that also had anything to, you know, improve the gross margins, or is it currently a decent proportion of a sale? And just some comments around that.
The gourmet burgers which we have added just now is just on test. So it's just in about 5 restaurants in the west and 5 restaurants in the south. We are seeing good results of it. So in the future, definitely it will help us on gross margins, but currently it's a real low contribution to the system.
And the plan is obviously to keep some of the SKUs. Not all the SKUs would end up being a part of our menu in the future.
Absolutely. So that's why the test, and we are figuring out what's consumer preference. And then soon, once the new normal sets in, we will be launching them.
That's helpful, Smita. Just one last question from my side, Amit. You mentioned about, you know, getting back to your store additions of between 20 to 30. Now, traditionally, McDonald's has had one of the larger store, you know, compared to some of the other players. So incrementally looking, when you are speaking so much of the convenience channel, is there a thought of maybe stores which are smaller in size or probably not in high streets? Just your thought about incrementally, where could most of your stores come up?
So firstly, you know, we've had a lot of internal debate around the size of the store, and at least in our case, the jury is still out there. We are not jumping into smaller stores. That's the easiest thing to do in the world. But there is, you know, tremendous discussion around what that would mean and all. So I maintain that currently we will continue with the current format of stores. In terms of openings, it will continue to be a mix of, you know, the kind of cities, key cities, the 6 key cities. But we are also, while I do strongly believe that we have a lot of small cities as well, where we do very well, but I do believe that there is some momentum that is coming a bit more in these cities as well, and that could be a good way for us to accelerate our openings as well. So that is something that we are thinking and looking at as also. So I don't know if it answers both your questions.
To an extent it does. Maybe later on I'll get into a discussion with you. I'll move back into the queue from now. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and 1 to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Ashir Desai from MK Global Financial Service. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. Hi, Amit.
Hi.
So I'm still not clear on the math behind the one-off salary incentives and bonuses. So I think Pankaj mentioned some split between employee costs and G&A. Two things here. One is, I mean, salary raises and bonuses are an annual feature. So one, why are we calling this a one-off? And if the rate of increases are much higher, which you may call it a one-off, what would be the normal run rate for employee cost? And I see even HO costs going up from 17, 18 crores to 26 crores. So what should be a quarterly run rate to look at on both these line items?
So, Pankaj, you'll take that?
Yeah. So, then on the maths of, why we are calling it one time, I think, Amit already said it because, in the last 9 months, what we have been seeing on our previous earning calls, quarter four is the quarter where we have reinstated the salaries and we announced a special bonus for the hard work done by our employees in this year of pandemic. So that's why we are calling it a one-time cost, right? And hence, it was not booked every month in the last 12 months. It was a cost that was booked on Q4, right? About your second question, so, the cost is coming in two lines. One is on the labor front at the crew level, which is on the stores, and the second one is G&A. I was talking about the combined effect. So things are not like for like. Because of the difference in number of stores, operating hours, the cost rationalization, there is an impact coming a bit from all the efforts that we spoke about. So it's not a straight calculation that one can do to arrive at those numbers.
Yeah, so one is before restaurant operating margin, that's at the restaurant level, and we break out our corporate overhead very clearly, which is the G&A line item, which is what Pankaj is referring to, a combination of both.
Okay, so if you were to look at G&A, which has moved up from 17, 18 crores to 26 crores, this 26 crores would be the run rate to take for quarters ahead, or it should be lower?
No, it will be lower. That's what Pankaj is saying, because the entire impact of the bonus has been hit into this quarter, which is normally not the case, which is normally split across every single month of the year. So, given the work and the results that we got, and particularly the cost reduction and the ROM growth, we wanted to, it's been a pretty tough year, and we wanted to ensure that all the people at least got their bonuses. So it's a single hit in that one, in this one quarter. That's what Pankaj is referring to.
Okay. I'm sorry to drill deeper on this, but so 11% margin is if you were to split this entire increase over four
Correct.
quarters.
Yes.
Correct.
It's not entirely removing that part in the fourth quarter.
No.
No. That's right.
Got it. Got it. And lastly, any pricing actions that you have taken in April, May, and also your comments on input inflation, if any?
Sure. So price increase we've not taken, nothing, especially in April, May, absolutely nothing. In terms of inflation, I do worry about it. Obviously, we can all see and read where things are. Supply chains are a little bit not intact. Not that we've seen anything at this point in time, but I'll be honest, it's a worry on my head right now. And the good news is that we are aware that something like this could happen. And again, if you refer to all my calls over the last 5, 7 years, I've always said that if we will not do knee-jerk reactions, if suppose some cost comes out of nowhere, we will evaluate where that cost is going, and we will fix that over a quarter or two. So I think, therefore, some effort in terms of further reduction of raw cost and hopefully some comeback through McCafé, these are a couple of our initiatives that will help us offset some of those costs. So yes, inflation is a bit of a worry moving forward.
Okay, and we haven't taken any pricing actions as of now.
No.
Okay. Thanks. That's it from me. All the best.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chinmay Gambhir from Bharti AXA Life Insurance. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my question, sir. So my question is on the rental front. Last year, we did get some benefit because of the negotiations that we did in the initial part of the year. So how much of the benefit would be recurring in FY 22, or largely the benefit was for FY 21 itself? Yeah.
Pankaj, can you take that?
Yeah. So, the rent negotiations that we have done is again on a full year basis. However, they were front loaded, as we had shared that in our previous earnings comment. But because we structured the rent negotiations over a period of time, so every quarter we booked rebates and the negotiated amounts, and such that quarter four has also been booked for a rent concession. Now, as we move forward, and we have been sharing also in previously by Amit, we are working on the network optimization, right? So there are opportunities that we are figuring out on the real estate deals which are available for rental negotiations or relocations or what long-term restructuring we can do. And that is one of the best real estate competitive advantage that we carry, because our deals are of longer term. The inflation only comes after 5 years. So that we are able to drive this optimization also in the years to come, maybe in a different way. But these cost optimizations are here to stay as much as our intent is.
But the negotiations per se were, or the rebates are primarily for FY21, right? I mean,
because
and the impact would have been kind of decreasing every quarter by quarter. Because the rebates you would have booked would have kind of reduced, right?
Yeah, so the negotiations were differently done for a segment of stores, depending on the strategy that we adopted for the cluster of stores. Some rebates were negotiated for 12 months and then, you know, every quarter the phasing was done. Some were front-loaded because of cash perspective. So, you know, it was not a straight negotiation that you do in a set of 300 stores. But what we ensured is that it is not a one-time activity and the benefit of it comes in every quarter.
Yeah, but so for FY22 also we have kind of started negotiating because, for the quarters or how is that? And what was the total saving if you could quantify in FY21 on this?
So
that breakup we won't share, but Pankaj can answer the other question.
Yeah, so breakup of the rebates we don't share, Chinmay, but on the second part, which is what are we doing about FY22 and beyond, as I said, you know, network optimization is a continuous exercise for us in the development cycle. So we not only work on the new sites, creating a funnel of stores, deciding the next locations and the formats, it is also in the space of cost optimization of what stores are giving us opportunity for a cost negotiation or for relocations or for rental deals. So this is not something that we will do because 21 has rebates. This is kind of a continuous cycle for us.
So we will go back to landlords and talk about FY22 to the best of our ability, basically.
Yeah.
And malls also, you know, as I've maintained before, we have revenue share. So, you know, given that revenues are zero, that does help us a little bit.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Gaurav Jogani from Access Capital Limited. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity, sir. My question is with regards to the increase in the payables. So there has been a sharp increase in the payables, both in terms of, you know, if you see the absolute amount and also in the number of days. So is this a trend that is expected to stay ahead?
Yeah, Pankaj.
Yeah. So on the payables, yes. You know, when we started from Q1 to where we are, there has been working capital optimization with all our partners and vendors. So we started the quarter one with a higher cycle, then brought it down as the cash cycles were getting normalized. Going forward, we will be intending to come back to a normal cycle of payments. However, if the industry offers a renegotiation on payment terms, we are also working on that ground. With the balance sheet strength that we have closed the year with, going forward, we will try to be within the range of credit terms that we operate with our suppliers, but finding the optimized way of working capital as well.
Yeah, so because the reason I asked you is it's almost doubled, if you see in terms of number of days. So it was like 31 odd days earlier and now 70. So what kind of, you know, number can we build going ahead, considering it comes down back to the normal level for the negotiation as you're speaking you're going to do?
Yeah, so a lot of it depends on the volumes as well. So if you take, I think FY21 will not be the right reference. If you take FY20 reference, that is the kind of levels of payables that we would build for our business on the credit terms.
Would this have an impact on the cash flow as well? Because I see a lot of this has contributed, you know, to your net working cash flow this particular year. Is there supposed to have some impact going forward?
No, I think it's the other way around. Depending on our cash cycle getting normalized, that is how we structure our working capital payouts. It is not the other way around where, you know, you are saying it will have an impact on cash. As we are moving forward, depending on the business normalcy and the cash cycles, then we negotiate with our vendors and suppliers to able to fulfill the obligation that are mutually decided.
Okay, sure. Just one last thing from my end is, the CapEx guidance, you know, considering that we are looking to open a 25-30 odd stores this year, but also the fact that we have been able to get some good deals. Like, what kind of a CapEx that we, you know, we can look forward for FY 2022 or 2023?
Our average CapEx, if you have seen the previous figures, has been around 100 stores-150 stores. Now on this year, guidance of 20 stores-30 stores, depending on how the situation is, you could expect around 100 crores of CapEx for this year as well.
Okay. Sure, sir. Thank you. That's it from me.
Thank you
very much. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraint, that will be the last question for today. I will now hand the conference over to Mr. Amit Jatia for closing comments.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I really appreciate everybody joining the call today and taking the time to discuss Westlife's results with us. Wish you a very good evening and do take care and stay safe. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Westlife Development Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.